A Hindu mother whispers prayers as her Air India flight touches down in 1984 Buffalo. She's smuggling something precious, her two sons, without proper visas. Back in educated middle-class India, a telephone remained an impossible luxury. Here, her $14,000 postdoctorate salary could change everything. They could only afford one ticket. They came anyway. This gamble captures something essential about American capitalism. It's always been less about freedom and more about refrigerators. The pilgrims weren't just seeking religious liberty, they were trapped in a venture capital deal gone wrong. Merchant adventurers demanded 6 days of weekly labor instead of four, claimed ownership of settlers' houses, and nearly canceled the whole expedition over financial disputes. When the leaking speedwell forced everyone onto the Mayflower, landing 220 miles off course, half died that first winter. Their salvation? Beaver pelts and a pivot to private land ownership that tripled productivity overnight. America's origin story is a startup that barely survived its Series A funding. By the 1760s, Virginia's plantation elite had perfected a profitable contradiction, preaching liberty while building empires on slavery. When Parliament passed the Stamp Act, wealthy planters like Thomas Jefferson didn't just object to taxation without representation, they owed British creditors nearly half of the colony's $4 million debt. Independence meant escaping both political control and loan payments. Eli Whitney's 1793 cotton gin transformed upland cotton from worthless to gold, exploding production from 3,000 to 136,000 bales in a decade. Jefferson's Louisiana purchase opened vast territories, but Virginia's depleted tobacco soil couldn't grow cotton. The solution? An internal slave market funneling humans from the Upper South to Mississippi and Alabama plantations. By mid-century, cotton dominated American exports, and enslaved people became the nation's most valuable asset class, worth several times the federal budget. The Three-Fifths Compromise protected the South's balance sheet. When Lincoln won without a single Southern state, South Carolina cited his opinions hostile to slavery and seceded immediately. Fort Sumter's bombardment on April 12, 1861, launched a war fusing government and industry. Pennsylvania Railroad executive Tom Scott became Assistant Secretary of War, with Andrew Carnegie supervising rail infrastructure. Lincoln's naval blockade devastated Southern cotton exports by 93%. Northern federal spending exploded from $66 million to $474 million within a year, while young entrepreneurs like Rockefeller and Carnegie built fortunes supplying the war machine. Robert Fulton's 1807 steamboat pioneered river transport, but the real revolution came when Gibbons versus Ogden, 1824, killed state monopolies, creating competitive chaos where Cornelius Vanderbilt thrived. The Erie Canal, dismissed by Jefferson as madness, opened in 1825 and paid for itself within years. Yet canals were already obsolete. By 1857, railroads represented $400 million and 25,000 miles of track. The Illinois Central, chartered with federal land grants in 1851, recruited European immigrants and transformed Chicago into America's logistics heart. Samuel Morse's telegraph changed everything. At $200 per mile versus railroad's $20,000, it transmitted information at light speed. The 1844 Baltimore-Washington line enabled real-time army coordination and instant market responses. The 1849 California Gold Rush flooded the economy with $300 million in gold, but the telegraph truly collapsed distance. Levi Strauss and Wells Fargo built empires serving miners, not mining. The pattern repeated endlessly. Infrastructure creates winners, but selling tools to prospectors beats prospecting. Post-war titans perfected consolidation through ruthless efficiency. Rockefeller acquired 22 of Cleveland's 26 refineries by 1872, knowing transportation costs determined commodity winners. Carnegie's Edgar Thomson Steelworks generated nearly $10 profit per ton. Steel rails lasted 20 times longer than iron. Both understood scale wasn't just advantageous, it was the only sustainable strategy. Edison's 1882 Pearl Street station illuminated possibility itself. Within a year, newspapers mentioned electric night baseball and horseless streetcars. The magic wasn't the light, it was the switch. Alexander Turney Stewart's cast iron palace invented modern retail, honest salespeople, fixed prices, and permission to browse without buying. Shopping transformed from transaction to experience. Prosperity bred tension. The 1886 Haymarket bombing destroyed middle-class sympathy for labor overnight. Carnegie's Gospel of Wealth defended inequality while arguing the rich should donate fortunes before death. Herbert Spencer's social Darwinism provided philosophical cover. Superior cultures naturally spread. Except nature doesn't build steel mills. The 1890 Sherman Antitrust Act backfired. Unable to coordinate prices legally, companies merged instead. J.P. Morgan orchestrated massive consolidations, creating United States Steel in 1901, the first billion-dollar company. Theodore Roosevelt embraced progressive reform, arguing trusts should be not prohibited, but supervised and within reasonable limits controlled. Upton Sinclair's The Jungle exposed horrifying meatpacking conditions. Though targeting worker exploitation, readers fixated on contaminated meat. Roosevelt's investigation confirmed the horrors, leading to the 1906 Federal Meat Inspection Act and Pure Food and Drug Act. Federal oversight was born. Henry Ford incorporated Ford Motor Company in 1903 with $28,000, rejecting investors who dilute his vision. His moving assembly line reduced chassis assembly from 12 hours to 93 minutes. To counter monotonous work, Ford doubled minimum wage to $5 daily in 1914 while cutting hours to 8. By 1916, a worker could buy a $360 Model T with 72 days of labor. Automobile ownership became a fundamental mark of American citizenship, not through government programs, but because one industrialist refused to maximize shareholder value. World War I transformed everything. Federal expenditures exploded from $734 million in 1916 to $12.7 billion in 1918. The 1920s brought radio, often the first electric device in rural homes. RCA, GE, and Westinghouse formed NBC in 1926, creating America's first national network. Then came 1929's crash, with unemployment exceeding 15% by early 1932. Roosevelt's New Deal transformed government into economic actor of last resort. Farm relief, FDIC insurance, SEC regulation, Social Security. The Dow rose 66% in 1933. World War II cemented this shift. Auto production plummeted from 4 million vehicles in 1940 to just 139 cars in 1943, while aircraft production reached 100,000 planes annually. The post-war GI Bill provided unemployment pay, education benefits, and loan guarantees. Bill Levitt transformed potato fields into Levittown, 4,000 identical ranch homes at $7,990 each. Television exploded from fewer than 10,000 sets in 1946 to 26 million households by 1955. The interstate highway system enabled trucking to surpass railroads, spawning discount retailers like Kmart that devastated Main Street. Prosperity had a price: homogenization. The Cold War accelerated computing through military applications, with IBM's revenues approaching $2 billion by 1960. Bob Noyce and Gordon Moore founded Intel in 1968 with $2.5 million. Its 1971 IPO formalized Silicon Valley's playbook and birthed modern venture capital. The 1980s saw Michael Milken revolutionize finance through junk bonds, enabling KKR's $25 billion RJR Nabisco buyout. The 1990s internet boom created unprecedented wealth. Netscape's IPO made Jim Clark $700 million and turned Kleiner Perkins' $5 million into over $200 million. The 2000 bubble burst, yet Amazon and eBay survived, permanently changing consumer behavior. Apple's iPhone represented both triumph and paradox. Despite record trade deficits and manufacturing jobs moving overseas, America remained a production powerhouse. But modern progress benefited Americans as consumers while excluding most as producers, breaking the century-old equation where households took pride in being both. Quality of life improved dramatically. Crime dropped 70% since the 1990s, homes doubled in size since 1950, yet many felt disconnected from prosperity concentrated in coastal cities and among technical elites. From Pilgrim venture capital to Silicon Valley IPOs, each generation faces the same question: how do we balance innovation with inclusion? As we face climate change and artificial intelligence, the challenge remains ensuring economic growth translates to broadly shared prosperity. That Hindu mother who whispered prayers on an Air India flight bet everything that America's equation still worked. Whether it continues depends on whether we remember that capitalism without shared prosperity isn't the American dream, it's just capitalism.